This is the Head On Radio Network.
This is the Quality News Network. The U.S. military says April has been one of the most deadly months for U.S. forces since the Iraqi invasion 4 years ago. More than 100 U.S. soldiers have died. In Baghdad, 14 U.S. soldiers and Marines and an interpreter were killed over the weekend. The deaths were the result of roadside bombs and small arms fire. A report by the U.S. Inspector General says 7 out of 8 reconstruction projects in Iraq have failed. The report blames poor construction, substandard supplies, and bad maintenance. Iran has agreed to attend this week's Iraq conference aimed at stabilizing the country. Iraq's prime minister has warned Tehran's sectarian violence could spill over to neighboring countries, including Iran. In London, 5 Muslim British citizens were found guilty of terrorism charges today and sentenced to 40 years in prison. 2 men were found not guilty. The men were charged with planning to bomb a shopping center, nightclub, and gas network. Pakistan's interior minister is recovering from wounds sustained in a suicide bombing Saturday. 28 were killed when the bomber detonated himself during a public speech. 52 were wounded. Kidnappers have released 9 oil field workers they seized last week during an attack on a Chinese oil field in Ethiopia. 77 people were killed in that raid. The Washington Post reports only $40 million have been used of the $854 million offered by foreign nations to help with Hurricane Katrina recovery. Most of the aid money wasn't even collected. In addition, the White House turned down donations of medicines, housing, and mobile phones. The U.S. has spent $125 billion repairing the Gulf Coast region. It will likely be months before the San Francisco Bay Area residents will return to their usual commutes to work. Yesterday, the heat from a fiery gasoline truck crash melted a section of the freeway and sent it hurtling down atop another section of the road. The truck's driver survived but was badly burned. World War II bomber pilot Robert Rosenthal has died of cancer. The recipient of the Distinguished Service Cross, he also prosecuted Nazis in the Nuremberg trials. He was 89. Gold is trading at $682.30 an ounce. You're listening to Quality News Network. Science and business next.
Here's good news about your money. Monterey County Bank has won the Bauer Financial 5-Star Superior Rating for financial strength and stability, making it one of the safest banks in Monterey County for your money. It's nice to know your money is in a safe place, but there are even more reasons to bank with Monterey County Bank. They now have 4 convenient locations in Carmel, Monterey, Carmel Valley, and Pacific Grove. And Monterey County Bank is the oldest locally owned bank, now celebrating its 30th anniversary serving you. Here's another important point. Local businesses have come to trust and rely on Monterey County Bank's position as the county's number one SBA small business lender. Safety, convenience, and local people you can trust. That's Monterey County Bank. Stop in at one of our 4 branches and find out why you can bank on us. Monterey County Bank, SBA preferred lender and equal housing lender, member FDIC.
Researchers say people suffering from migraines may also be generating brain damage as cells swell and lose oxygen. The scientists say there should be more focus on preventing migraines, and once a migraine starts, the sufferer should receive oxygen. More pet food recalls as a result of Chinese-produced rice protein. Veterinarians warn pet owners not to feed their animals anything with wheat gluten or rice protein. Thousands of pets have been sickened in the past month. Hundreds have died. The U.S. dollar has plummeted to a record low against the euro. Some analysts blame the drop on the U.S. report Friday, pegging economic growth at its lowest rate in 4 years. Also, inflation in the U.S. posted its largest rise in 16 years. Burger King recorded an increase in quarterly profit on a 9% bump in revenues to $539 million. The nation's second largest fast food chain credited sales of newly designed sandwiches. Yahoo will pay $680 million in cash and stock to acquire advertising company Right Media. The move is designed to help bolster Yahoo's attempts at selling ads outside of its website's marketplaces. Light sweet crude is trading at $66.22 a barrel. And on Wall Street at this hour, the Dow Jones is down 7 points, NASDAQ down 4, S&P 500 is flat. You can find more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Annabelle Lund.
This is a top to, you know, what we use on stage, but it's very, very special because if you can see,
yeah,
the numbers all go to 11. Look, right across the board, 11,
oh,
11,
and most of
11,
the
and then
amps go up to 10.
Exactly.
Does that mean it's louder? Is it any louder?
Well, it's one louder, isn't it? It's not 10. You see, most blokes are going to be playing at 10. You're on 10 here, all the way up, all the way up,
yeah,
all the way up. You're on 10 on your guitar. Where can you go from there? Where?
I don't know.
Nowhere, exactly. What we do is if we need that extra push over the cliff, you know what we do?
Put it up to 11.
11, exactly. One louder.
Why don't you just make 10 louder and make 10 be the top number and make that a little louder?
These go to 11.
Welcome to Conversation Radio's Lean, Mean, and Green Show. It's Foxed Up with John Fox, where we turn Conversation Radio into Conservation Radio. Foxed Up is brought to you by B1 Louder Productions of Sydney, Australia, and the Mid-Atlantic Regional Council of Carpenters. They're building the American dream every day. B1 Louder by ringing 877-443-2366. That's 877, the numeral 4, head on. And now, your host, the ranting, head-banging hippie, John Fox!
Well, all right. G'day, everybody. Welcome aboard Foxed Up here for a Monday morning, or really, really early Tuesday morning where I am. And you're listening to the Head On Radio Network, and we got an interview later today, we got a track of the day later today, we got some green news, and we got some stuff, and I actually could prepare, because, well, I'm not quite so busy this week. First of all, I was going around doing you know, the pre-show surf, and, of course, have to go to treehugger.com, and there's a story about the New York Times not exactly telling the whole truth. Where have we heard this before? But this time it doesn't have to. It's not dealing with the beat up to war. It's dealing with hydrogen cars. Now, they've done some very, very deceptive stuff. This was yesterday. Here at Treehugger it says, wind turbines and hydrogen cars, the match made in heaven and the most deceptive and manipulative picture in the New York Times. And they've got a picture of a Ford hybrid with these windmills behind it. It is one of a series of hydrogen vehicles oogled in the paper today. What is really fascinating is the editorial bias shown by the print editors, who chose not to run two very well-written articles available online that point out the problems with hydrogen. Jim Motavalli writes a Q&A that explains why hydrogen now comes from natural gas and how it is shipped with great difficulty and how ultimately the only way it is efficient is with nuclear power, which Armory Lovins describes as aspirational. Covering much of the same ground as Jim Motavalli, but in greater detail, hydrogen proponents promise a future of placid and carbon-free travel punctuated by occasional stops to replenish our tanks and conveniently as we fill them today. They champion an America laced by a hydrogen highway, dotted with service stations that offer safe, affordable refueling. Perhaps clean restrooms will be part of that future, too. However, there are a couple of small problems. Of the 50 million tons of hydrogen produced annually, fully a quarter of it is used to refine oil. And as the quality of crude oil deteriorates, it needs more hydrogen. 95% of the hydrogen made in the United States is created from natural gas through a process called steam reforming, which creates 350 million tons of carbon dioxide per year. Hydrogen does not travel or store well because its small molecule can leak out of the smallest fissure, and special pipes are needed. While it's possible to deliver hydrogen in pipes used for natural gas, is a well-known risk of hydrogen embrittlement, the tendency of hydrogen atoms to infiltrate the surface of welded or heat-treated steel, which can result in cracks and leaks. Now, the other issue with hydrogen is the fact that hydrogen cells require titanium. And anyone who has done the math, and I've seen a few people who have done this math over the last couple of years, have said that even if we found a way to generate the hydrogen that wasn't a mess, even if we found a way to generate the hydrogen that didn't require nuclear generators, there does not exist on the planet Earth enough titanium to produce enough fuel cells to power just America's cars. And just like clean coal technology, I think that this, again, is another like phantom technology. Yes, research and development led to this as a possibility, but we get further and further down the road, and it seems less viable. But a lot of the manufacturers, the current auto manufacturers, like it, and so do the petrol companies, because there is a fuel infrastructure that still keeps you connected to someone's pump. The last thing they want is for you to be able to buy a car or buy a vehicle and never have to go fill up anywhere. I'm telling you, the compressed air car, that is still my favorite. And plug-in hybrids, you know, fully electric cars, Phoenix motor cars, you know, this is the kind of stuff that really should be getting the coverage. And it sounds like the New York Times again is playing games with, you know, we'll take this little factoid and that little factoid and this little factoid and put them all together in a couple of sentences. It makes it all sound a certain way, but when you refill in the blanks between factoids one, two, and three, you get a completely different picture. And, you know, this is why we need to be really, really critical of what's reported out there. And good on the folks at Tree Hugger for picking this one up. I'll have to have a look at the New York Times for and read the actual story. And so it makes me want to know, where did the idea for this piece actually come from? You know, was it something that came from, you know, the editors as something viable to go down, or is this basically an advertising supplement in the form of a news piece? Because it gets harder and harder to tell the difference, and we know this. The prepackaged fake news garbage that, you know, came out of the White House in the past. So, you know, again, the paper of record is flawed. Again, always, always, always be critical. Unbelievable. Anyway, we're coming up on our first break, and we'll come back, and I got a couple little green stories to get to. Jay Leno's 100-year-old electric car. That's a really groovy one. And organic LEDs, something else that we'll talk about. So stick around, folks. You're listening to Foxed Up here on the Head On Radio Network. We'll be back right after this break with a couple of bits and then our track of the day. So stick around. We'll be right back.
Last girl's that one with a deep peg, still a plain trick, grass, so correct. That dog's under legal legs. She looks so good that he gets down in bed. She is watching the detectives.
The United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights are problem solvers. They accept any challenge and approach every project with the highest of competency and training. UBC has thousands of professionals who can be at your service, giving you the best in business anytime and every time. It's their job to provide manpower. They build partnerships based on respect and trust. They provide skilled, responsible millwrights and carpenters to meet the challenge of any project because they believe and what they're doing and are so very committed to getting each and every job done right. They include a clause in your contract that eliminates work slowdown and jurisdictional disputes because they believe that, as professionals, they can discuss and solve any problem while keeping your project on target on time. We'd like to take this opportunity to thank the men and women of the United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights for building the American dream and saving the American dream. Thank you.
Recently on the Guy James Show on the Head On Radio Network.
If you have tuned into this program by mistake right now, and you are a Republican, a right-wing Republican specifically, before this program is over, I do want to warn you, you're going to think that I'm the devil. You're going to think I've got horns and a red cape because I hate the Bush administration and everything they stand for. So be warned right away, okay? You're all warned right now that that's where we're coming from today.
Don't miss Guy James, weekdays, 3 to 5 Eastern Time, on the Head On Radio Network.
You can see that in Alberta, diversity is very strong. You see people from different places, from different backgrounds, and we all have learned to live together. That's why Alberta is a great place to live.
We come from different places, and we have to accept each other because our backgrounds are different, our cultures are different, and we have to understand other people.
I think that our community, being as open as it is, just gives people a chance to really enjoy interaction between different cultures and really get to know each other without making any judgments.
Trabajando juntos podemos lograr la gran diferencia en la comunidad. That it means by working together we can make a big difference in our community.
To find out how you can make a difference, visit helpmakeadifference.com. This message is brought to you by the Government of Alberta and Global Television.
Up, everybody. That's fantastic. All right. Well, so I'm surfing around again today, doing my thing. And over Popular Mechanics, there's a great post called The 100-Year-Old Electric Car, and it's written by Jay Leno. And I knew he was a car nut, but I had no idea about how extensive his collection was. He says here, all the current interest in hybrids and other vehicles with some sort of alternative powertrain is kind of amusing to me. Oh, don't get me wrong, I'm all for pursuing other ways to power cars. but I smile because I've owned three alternative energy cars for years. The newest was built in 1925, the oldest 1909. Each one is a rolling manifestation of a brilliant idea. Sadly, they were all way ahead of their time, and all three makes failed. My Baker Electric dates back nearly 100 years, and it's a late model. By then, the company had been selling electrics for more than a decade. Unlike other early cars, the Baker Electric needed no cranking, had no gasoline smell, and was essentially maintenance-free. Not surprisingly, it was marketed to women. The interior of my Baker is rather frou-frou, complete with a little makeup kit. Even though it's almost a century old, the car drives totally silently, like any modern electric vehicle. In fact, when I take it up into the hills, I have to be extra careful of deer. They usually just stand there and look in the windows, which makes the Baker my wife's favorite car. How cool is that? I also have known what can be considered an ancestor of today's hybrids, an Owen Magnetic, first seen in the auto show in New York City in 1915, just about the time that the Baker Electric gave it up. The Owen Magnetic has a gas engine and an electric generator. This drivetrain was the brainchild of George Westinghouse. The engine powers the generator, which creates a large magnetic force field between the engine and the drive wheels. There's no mechanical transmission. The driver moves a rheostat through four quadrants, a lot easier than shifting and grinding. The straight-cut gears of the day, and the car moves ahead progressively, giving occupants that odd feeling you get when you try to push similar pole magnets against each other. Both Enrico Cassaro and John McCormack drove Owen Magnetics. Owens were expensive and really sophisticated. They had an advanced 24-volt electrical system when most cars had only 6 volts, and Owen Magnetics had a black box called the brain. There's a big warning label right on it that reads, "Do not attempt to fix this or alter it. Only the factory can do this." Of course, the factories were located in Cleveland and Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania. That was a big help, and so the Owen Magnetic failed in 1921. So, I mean, this isn't new. And I nabbed the photo as well from Popular Mechanics, and it's properly credited, of Jay in this fantastic Baker Electric car. It ripped the entire bonnet off of a Model A, and that's kind of what it looks like. It's really, really cool. Yeah. So, I mean, they were doing this stuff a long time ago, so it still seems like, it seems like the uphill battle is never ending. And also, in fairly cool green developments, I've mentioned previously that super bright light-emitting diode technology has made great strides in the past few years. You know, the groovy little mini flashlights you can get, and that technology is now being developed into lighting fixtures. It'll be the next step from compact fluorescence. Even more power efficient, longer life, and no phosphorus or mercury in the disposal of them. But General Electric is working on a new thing called organic LEDs, made out of organic matter. And there's a great blog post from Edison's desk, which is a new blog over at General Electric. But there is a, and I need to get it back up here. I closed a few things. There's also a really, really good post. I believe it's at EcoGeek, if I'm not mistaken. And I'm going to go there. But here they're talking about the fact that they're working with, instead of having light-emitting diodes are basically two electrical plates in a sealed cavity. And the voltage has to jump from one plate to another. And depending on the chemical that you have it suspended in, decides the color of the light that is emitted. You know, one chemical gives you the green little LED that's on your computer monitor. They find the big jump for that was coming up with a chemical that created white light. Now, from ecogeek.org, which also has the link to the much more in detail General Electric blog post, it says, organic light-emitting diodes are versatile, bright, efficient light sources. OLEDs are a flat, two-dimensional light made by placing a series of organic thin films between two conductors. When electrical current is applied, light is emitted. The General Electric's Eco-Imagination Department has been developing OLED since 1999, and in 2003 they demonstrated a 2-inch by 2-inch OLED light source. For behind-the-scenes look at what's going on, they have another post. OLEDs can be made very thin and very power efficient. While currently not as efficient as fluorescent lights, OLEDs have a higher theoretical maximum efficiency. OLEDs don't produce waste heat and are also great for illuminating things you don't want to get hot, like cell phone screens. The manufacturing process for OLEDs can include printing dots of different organic compounds on a clear plastic carrier to create a matrix of pixels that emit different colored light. These systems could be used in television screens, computer displays, and cell phone screens. At the Las Vegas CES 2007 summit, Sony showcased a 27-inch full high-definition OLED television, claiming a million-to-one contrast ratio and total thickness of 5 millimeters. According to news reports, Sony plans to be releasing TVs this year. That's wild, they say at the end of the post here. So when do our semi-transparent, high-def, low-wattage, flexible pocket TVs arrive? All right, we're gonna go into our track of the day here. One of two guests is already waiting on the line, so we're gonna run to our track of the day, and hopefully we'll end up getting we have John on the line already, and we'll hopefully get Matt while we play this track. But I didn't know what else to play, and there's been so much global warming television on in Australia here. I just decided I figured I'd play this track from Mr. Alex Lloyd off the album Black the Sun called Melting. It's amazing what a guy with some guitars and a computer and a drum machine can do in his Sydney apartment. So without further ado, Melting from Mr. Alex Lloyd. Roll it, Bob.
Blisters upon my bed,
by the sun.
Mama said to go ahead,
talking to no one,
make a laugh, watching
and everyone. Maybe
I think I'll take that.
We could have found,
looking through the hours,
just past, what I needed,
never needed anyone.
Just why I drowned. Confusion is set to lead the blind, trapped by the thoughts left in your mind.
Sick jokes played on.
This is the Head On Radio Network.
All right, everybody, welcome back. We're going to just kind of blow straight through the normal break that we do here because we've got our guests on the line now. I would like to bring on to the program, it is my great pleasure, Mr. Mark Antkush and Mr. John Doucette. I hope I have pronounced both those names properly. Welcome to the program, gentlemen.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Okay, now the reason that I have you guys decide to bring you guys on, I found you, Mark, via your blog, ecoiron.blogspot.com, and back in January you had this great post on what would happen if Google made their homepage black. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, sure. Back then, I was actually sitting in my home office one day, and I just had this revelation that what a great idea it would be if, you know, some of these high-volume sites changed their background color from white to black, because at the time I assumed that, you know, on a CRT monitor, one that the big bulky ones, they use light to transmit the color, and, you know, white is usually the hot color, meaning it takes a lot of energy to use it, and black doesn't take as much. So I did a little math and found out that if you turn these pages from white to black, you could save a lot of money.
not just a lot of money, but in kind of a passive way, cut a whole bunch of carbon emissions out, really, in a way that I would never really thought of. But when you actually do the math, and there's millions of CRT monitors out there, it would definitely add up.
Oh, yeah, that's right. You know, one of the popular misconceptions is that a lot of the CRT is on its way out. And, in fact, other countries like China and Latin America, China, about 50% of their monitors are CRTs. And Latin America, about 75% of their monitors are CRTs. So while it is true in America, a lot of them are LCD monitors, which it doesn't matter what color they're showing for wattage usage. Other parts of the world, it's a big deal.
Absolutely, and I even commented on your blog as well that, you know, as technology moves forward, it usually ends up being the people who are less, you know, economically advantaged that are still on the older technology. So even there, the people who can least afford would end up being able to at least save a penny here or there. But to move on, this then brought up this concept of a low wattage color palette for websites, which you guys have come up with this thing called EmergyC, if I've got that correct. And this is what we've based our new website on, hence why I wanted to have you all on. So how did you all go about putting this together?
That's John's area.
Well, I can speak to that. Mark actually contacted me a while back, and he was mentioning he was having quite a bit of success with his blog, talking about the environment and e-waste and various topics, and he was interested in redesigning his site in a way that took on the whole concept of the black Google, where he could have a darker background, and it would require less energy to run his site. So taking that and having a look at the Energy Star color palette that already exists online, I just sat down and started putting colors together, which is part of my job on a daily basis anyway, and came up with five colors and white being an accent that I felt were pretty low wattage and could be put to the test. So with that, Mark ran the colors through the test and found out that they were within, I think, 3% of running an all-black background. So that's
how the colors only came about. Right. Now, you know, and I had a little bit of a chat via Gmail with Mark not long ago, and the EcoIron blog spot is really about trying to make IT green, and I think that this is just one way of doing it. This color palette, and I love it. I think that they're really great colors, and I think you've broken that concept that you can't do darker backgrounds and make it readable. I find that as a palette, it's very, very easy on the eyes. And, you know, it's got that nice green highlight in there, with which is just kind of like a nice thing as a bonus. But one of the things, you know, I don't want to spend the entire time talking about just the color palette, but what are some other things that you see are ways that, you know, general, because we're an internet radio network. I mean, everything we do deals with computers and the net. What are some other things that you have seen that can be done to help green up IT?
Well, it's a big field. All the big vendors have some sort of program on it. Dell has the Planetary for Me campaign. HP has a program. Apple has a program. So the sustainable technology initiative, they try and focus on, you know, what's good for the environment and where that overlaps with, you know, existing technologies that are in use. And there's a lot of areas where this can happen, you know, like telecommuting, virtualization is another technology that's out there, the web-based palette, the e-waste issue, that's the recycling of a component used after. So there's issues out there.
Well, that's a big one there, and from what I've been reading lately, Dell seems to be doing really well on that front with the Planetary for Me thing, and they also will take back an old computer, basically, regardless of the manufacturer, when you buy a new computer from them, and they will dispose of it. They have also, from what I understand, removed all the lead from their board manufacturing process, which is a huge thing. How does that compare to, say, Apple, who has been taking quite a bit of flack in the media for their lack of greenness? Is that just an unfair shake, or is that fairly accurate?
Well, maybe you've been reading my blog. Maybe you read my blog, but, you know, Greenpeace did come after Apple. They have a Green My Apple campaign, and I think that's how a lot of it got started. They have some, they did some testing at the beginning, testing Apple PowerBooks and some Dell computers, some Lenovo, and testing for hazardous substances. And they've since moved on from that. Now they're not so much about the testing and more about the policies that these different companies have. Now, if you look at the different policies, you know, Apple, Dell, Lenovo, HP, they all have pretty similar policies. I think they're doing the best that they can do to identify substances and remove them from their existing product line. I personally think that Apple's taking it a bit on the chin with Greenpeace going after them, because no one's, I think they're pretty equal programs. I think they're pretty equal programs.
Okay, well, some of what I've read about the kind of bashing of Apple, I think also kind of came from the fact that they try to put forward this very, very hip, fresh, with it, young kind of image.
Yeah.
And read into that is maybe unfairly or naively a bit more of being progressive when it comes to, you know, environmental practices. So I think some of it came from the fact that some people felt that Apple is kind of, in a very subtle way, false advertising. You know, they're not really living up to that reputation that they try to put forth with the iPod and being all kind of schmick and groovy the way that they do. And, I mean, that is their ad campaign.
Right. Well, I mean, I think there's two issues here. You know, one is the fact that Apple is recognized as the de facto leader in a lot of technology development. I mean, would you agree with that?
Oh, absolutely. Because, I mean, before I did this, I was an audio engineer, recording engineer, and up until XP came out for Windows, you couldn't really do multi-track audio on anything aside from a Mac, and video production was the was the same thing. So you're saying that also, you know, if you're going to be the front runner in the technology, you should also be the leading the way when it comes to doing things in a clean and sustainable fashion.
Well, what I'm saying is I think people have that expectation that since Apple is leading a lot of the technological revolution, that they should also be, quote-unquote, leading the sort of green revolution as well. I don't know if that's exactly founded or not. I mean, I do believe they're doing as much as anyone to foster green IT-related initiatives. Are they doing, you know, groundbreaking stuff like offering 10-year warranties on their equipment, or, you know, taking back anyone's equipment to recycle it? No, they're not. But no one else is doing that either. So, the second point
have you heard
up too? Well, go ahead.
Go ahead.
Well,
no, please finish.
As well is there is the metrics by which these companies are being evaluated on. And for example, you know, Apple is revolutionizing music. They're converting all of these audio files that were once stored on these plastic discs called CDs, which were churned out probably hundreds of millions a day, and they're turning it all into a digital archive, which has these iPod players to use it. I mean, no one's measuring the economic and environmental impact of that. And that just seems to be, I mean, clearly, if you look at it from that perspective, you know, we're eliminating hundreds of millions of CDs that are being burned every day for this audio, electronic, digital format. Do you follow me on that?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And you know, I wasn't really trying to back up the Apple bashing.
Right.
It's just, but it is interesting how it has been portrayed very differently. You know, and I think it is. I think you're right that there is this preconceived notion, right or wrong, that if you're leading the way on technology, you'd be leading the way in all other facets of business, and it's not necessarily true. And like you said, you know, the people downloading music is actually a huge step in a way, because not only are you not, you know, manufacturing these discs, you're also not having to ship them. You know, you're not having to run storefronts in which to, you know, to actually display them and then sell them. But then there is the offshoot that there aren't, you know, viable jobs in record stores anymore. I mean, I'm old enough to remember going and opening through vinyl,
right.
which was, you know, even more wasteful, you know, and little did we know then what we know now. And you know, it's interesting how it just ends up being encapsulated slightly differently depending on where it comes from, because I mean Dell down here in Australia, Dell's getting all the press when it comes
right.
to doing this. But I wanted to ask you, and I don't have the details of the company here. Last year, sometime one of our bloggers, we call them the news ninjas here, sent me a link to a company that was actually making biodegradable computer hardware, as in the LCD screen, when it finally carked it, you could pull the LCD element out of it, and because the rest of the casing was made out of wood, you could bury it in your compost.
Yeah.
And they were actually making do you know anything about this?
Yes. I did write a story on them. And I can't remember the name of the company, but that is in fact true. It's a company that you can take your used computer and essentially throw it in your garden, and it biodegrades. I haven't heard about that. I think they're a small manufacturer. But that
And you know, I mean, I saw some of their towers that they made, and as far as cases go, I mean, they were some sexy cases. And I would also think that, you know, you bought one of those cases, you know, next time you had to upgrade, you wouldn't be replacing that case real fast. You'd be getting a new motherboard and you know, just replacing the components, because, you know, a box is a box is a box if the screws and the stands offs are all in the right places. But I think that, you know, eliminating the lead and the mercury components from the production process is really important, and many companies seem to be taking that on. And getting more into organic casing materials, I think, is probably a huge step in reducing the waste because, you know, in this technology age, we are creating a massive amount of waste, electrical, you know, waste every year. I mean, it's you know, and computer parts should not be ending up in landfill. As you know, I see council pickups here, you know, that your bi-yearly big cleanup, and you know, there's just tons of it lined up on the street because someone's gotten a new computer again.
Oh yeah, it's very damaging to the environment. Well, in the U.S., we throw out about 130,000 PCs a day. PCs account for about 70% of all the heavy metals in landfills because of all the, you know, all the components in there are toxic. They really need to be treated like hazardous waste. It's probably one of the most wasteful things to produce. A typical PC is about 1,800 pounds of raw materials to produce, and the chip itself is about 70 pounds of raw materials go into just making that process. And so,
yes.
You know, the estimates are on a weight for weight ratio. A computer takes about 10 times as much raw materials by weight to produce the finished product. Now, this is much worse than like automobiles, which are about 1-to-1 now. So, twice as much material to make a car as you do in the finished product, or a refrigerator is the same way. It's about 2-to-1, 1-to-1. But computers are 10-to-1, probably the most wasteful product in the world to manufacture and produce. So, you know, if we can keep them around for a little bit longer, that would be
okay.
Very environmentally
sound. That brings up my next subject. The Linux debate has been coming, or the Linux point has been coming up in this debate as well. The fact that, you know, hardware seems to have twice the life expectancy when running Linux than your standard PC, as far as you know, upgrades making older hardware obsolete.
Yeah.
And the fact that you can get, like you said, with the CDs and music, you can go and get an operating system for free and download it.
Yeah.
When you want to base something on Linux. And I read a story that last quarter, Dell's orders, two-thirds of them were requested with a Linux install done, either a dual boot machine or just straight Linux. Now, I think that was in reaction to the Doggy Vista issue. But, again, this is another one of those things. I think, you know, we got to find ways to make, like you said, our computer systems last us a longer period of time. And I think about how many computers did you say we throw away per day?
Well, in the U.S., it's about 130,000 a day. And
I wonder how many of those go ahead.
Well, the estimate is that there's maybe 300 to 500 million stored away in people's basements, their garage, warehouses. So the fact is there's still a lot of them. Probably 75% of computers are still sitting around in people's, you know, apartments and basements waiting to be recycled. So it's a huge issue.
And I just sit there and wonder how many of those computers could have been, you know, revived with, say, a very lightweight Linux installation and, you know, given or sold to somebody who does not have the technology yet. You know, I've done plenty of rebuilding old cheap PCs for people and getting them online when they, you know, couldn't afford to get online any other way.
Now, John, didn't you just do one for your mom this way?
Yeah, I did, actually, just this weekend. My company cycles out computers quite often, and instead of, you know, reusing some machines that still have a lot of life left, it's pretty much everyone gets the latest and greatest, and then the old machines,
employees are allowed to take them home if they'd like. So I put my name on the list to take any of the excess machines. And I just take them home and put an operating system on and give them to my friends that can't afford machines. And I think, in a way, that's a small, you know, it's a small way to cut down on the waste, but it's also a way to do something nice for someone that, you know, can't afford it.
Absolutely, you know, and I think that a lot in this environmental game of is small things in you know, more often, and it ends up adding up. And karma is a great thing. If you can take something that you're no longer making use of and make it viable for someone else, you know, again, the human rights maniac part of me that feeds that side of my personality. And when you rebuild these machines, you say you put an operating system on them. Are you doing these as Linux machines, or as a rule, or are you doing some version of Windows or something?
I've actually been using the free operating system called Ubuntu, and I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that correctly, but it's just like you talked about earlier. It's a free operating system that you can download directly from the Ubuntu website, and it takes literally 5 minutes to be up and running, and you have all the features of a Windows operating system, and it's absolutely free. So that's what I've been using, and I've had really good luck with it to this point.
Yeah, I've heard really, really good things about the Ubuntu release, and there's Fedora Core is the really big one that I hear a lot of people are using. I'm about to take the big dive very soon, and actually I have a PC that's about to be kind of replaced because it's getting on. But I've made this PC run for 5 years now. It's gone through about 6 power supplies. But I'm about to take that big dive, and I have done an Ubuntu installation once on a dual boot machine, which I found out is not the way to do it. But you're right, you know, it's an install CD just like doing, you know, your XP install, and it comes up looking, you know, same type of graphic interface, runs all your standard kind of software, and runs very, very light, and. You know, this might actually be really the future of where things go. I'm a big fan of the open source world. I mean, I base virtually all the websites I build, because I do a lot of blogs, I do on WordPress, and I think it's, you know, the open source community very often does a better job than the corporate writers, because you have a lot of people that are overwriting software, as we've seen with Vista.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, yeah, the desktop computing is such a strange environment, because everything else in the corporate environment has been centralized. You have centralized databases, you have centralized email services, you know, if you have some big application packages are often centralized. But for some reason, the desktop stays around as something where you have to put, you know, a copy of Word or Photoshop or what have you on every single desktop. And it's such a mystery and such a waste at some level. And I do agree with you that, you know, if you had a machine, an old machine running new Linux and a GNU Linux actually, and you know you're accessing all these online web services, it's just so much more efficient. I'm a big user and big believer in some of the Google applications. I don't know if you've experimented with those, the documents and the spreadsheets and their email service.
Gmail, I'm a big fan.
It's very, very efficient, it seems, to do that.
All right. Well, gentlemen, I need to wrap this up. I really, really thank you so much for your time, Mark and John. And you can see, everybody can get more information at EcoIron, ecoiron.blogspot.com. And there's links on today's show post. Gentlemen, thank you so much for this. This has been great, and we'll have to have you on again in the future and talk about more ways to green up our IT lives.
Well, thank you very much.
Yes, thank you very much.
Right on, guys. Have a great day. Thanks a lot. And have a look, you know, and there's a great comment thread on the post about the low wattage palette, because, you know, people may, you know, discuss the pros and the cons, and, you know, while everybody's going to LCDs, well, not everybody's going to LCDs, you know, and it's always the poorest people that will be on the oldest technology. And, you know, it may be, in a way, a gesture in how much, you know, it really makes a difference. But yet again, just like I've mentioned about the local cooling application that I run on my PCs here, it's also a constant reminder that every decision we make is an environmental decision. And we have to live our lives like this. And Eco Iron's a great blog. I've been skimming over it and keeping a close eye on it over the last couple of weeks as I've been gearing up to build our new site here at the Head On Radio Network. And, you know, some really, really neat stuff. There's a great post on there about some new server technology and some other things that are happening. So, you know, creative engineering. I love this stuff. So we got to wrap it up, folks. I think we're running out of time fast. So thanks to Bob Kincaid for producing today. Awesome job. I love when you play DJ. It's so much fun. Thanks to the News Ninjas, who are swimming in their new technology right now on the blog. And I think they're liking what they're playing with. Thanks to our mods in the chat room. You do a great job. Thank you to the Carpenters for everything they do for us. Ben Birch is still running that fundraiser. Go over there, drop him a few bucks, do the right thing, because if you're listening to us, you need to support Ben Birch and the White Rose Society. So, as we say here on Foxed Up, be good, be green, and we will see you tomorrow for the Cup of Joe show.
I would tell you that sometimes it's easier to desire and pursue the attention and admiration of 100 strangers than it is to accept the love and loyalty of those closest to me. And I would tell you that sometimes I prefer to look at myself through someone else's eyes. Eyes that aren't clouded with the tears of knowing what an asshole I can be, as yours are. If ever I would stop thinking about music and politics, I might be able to listen in silence to your concerns, rather than hearing everything as an accusation or an indictment against me. And I would tell you that sometimes I use sex to avoid communication. It's the best escape when we're down on our luck. But I can express more emotions than laughter, anger, and let's f***. If ever I would stop thinking about music and politics, if ever I would stop thinking about music and politics, if ever I would stop thinking about music and politics, if ever I would stop thinking about music and politics. If ever I would stop thinking about music and politics,
I would tell you. You're listening to The Horn, the Head On Radio Network.
This is the Quality News Network. A major freeway interchange collapsed early Sunday morning in Oakland, California, caused by a tanker truck that flipped and burned its load of 8,600 gallons of unleaded. The heat was so intense it collapsed the freeway. Governor Schwarzenegger has already signed an emergency order, and crews are working double time to get the overpass back in shape. The truck driver's okay. He walked to a gas station, called a cab, and went to the ER with second-degree burns to his arms and face. Commuter schedules will be disrupted for weeks. Five Britons have been sentenced to life in prison after being found guilty of plotting to carry out Al-Qaeda-inspired bomb attacks on targets in England, from a shopping mall to a nightclub. The gang planned on using bombs to exact revenge for Britain's support of the United States after 9/11. In a separate case in London, six Muslim men today face a magistrate on charges they raised money for terrorists. Those six were arrested last Tuesday. The latest audit by the Special Inspector General for Iraq Reconstruction found that uncertainty and delays plague the rebuilding effort. Daily violence, corruption, and poor maintenance are the factors. Iran has agreed to attend this week's Iraq conference aimed at stabilizing the country. Iraq's prime minister has warned Tehran sectarian violence could spill over to neighboring countries, including Iran. Early this morning, British-led NATO troops launched a major offensive. It was designed to drive the Taliban from the southern Afghanistan region. In the western part of the country, fighting has been fierce over the weekend. At least 136 suspected insurgents were killed, and one U.S. soldier died. Army Chief of Staff General George Casey says he needs the recruitment of an additional 65,000 soldiers to start now, faster than the Pentagon had expected. Pakistan's interior ministers recovering from wounds sustained in a suicide bombing Saturday. 28 were killed when the bomber detonated himself during a public speech. 52 were wounded. Muammar Gaddafi, Libya's leader, has cautioned